Moto America fans, it's time for another episode of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and you may even learn something from this unlikely pair and their special guest. The mic is yours, Paul and Sean.
Hello, Moto America fans, and welcome to this ultra special edition of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. As we mentioned on social media, we are going to have two people on our podcast today. We don't usually do two people on a podcast that's not on a video version, which is when we have them at the race weekends. But we have our director of operations, Nicole Cox, and we also have our race director, Rick Hobbs. Oh, and we also have our communications manager, Paul Carruthers. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm good. So, you know, I guess we won't even bother talking about our usual, the weather and all that. We should probably get right into it because we got a lot of questions that we want to ask these guys. So, Paul, you ready? We'll just kind of fire it up and go.
Yeah, I guess I wanted to talk about the barber a little bit, but I guess we don't have to do that. I guess our conversation is going to be strictly barber anyway, so we might as well just get right into it.
Yeah.
I think, from looking at this from our standpoint, I don't know everything that's in the rule book. I should, but I don't.
I don't either.
I rely on race direction. I rely on Nicole and figure they're going to make the decisions based on the rule book or what have you, and they're going to do a good job. And you know, it's hard not to take it personally when we kind of do get attacked for one of our decisions. And also, I think it's important, you know, the people that make the decisions don't get to say why they made these decisions. You know what I mean? It's like everybody can just go on Facebook or whatever and throw it out their comment. And we never get a chance for those people to have, you know, a moment when they can tell, you know, to tell the rest of us why they did this and why they did that. And I think it's important that that's why we're doing this today. And I'm not here to throw up softballs to them so they can show how smart they are and how good of decisions they made, because, you know, some of the decisions I may not agree with, you may not agree with, but I think it's a good opportunity for them to say why they made the decisions they did. And yeah, obviously we're talking mainly about the Gus Rodeo situation. And I think you have to understand that here was a kid that came into this race. He had a big championship lead. He had a basically not a perfect season, but he was a podium finisher in all four of the previous rounds. He had a nice points lead. He was sort of on top of the world. And then the rug got completely pulled out from under his feet. And you've got dads involved. You've got moms involved. It's like, you know, it's, you know, and Rick knows this more than anybody. I mean, you work in racing and you put a lot of effort into the races themselves, dealing with the riders, getting everything fixed the way you want it to be fixed. And then, you know, you kind of feel like you get screwed by a decision like this. So it's hard to keep your emotions in check. But again, I think it's important for people to know why we did what we did. So why don't you get started and we'll go from there.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to start off by saying one of the things that has been rightly identified in some of the comments in social media is the fact that Moto America is sanctioned by the FIM and AMA. So I want to make that clear. And I want to start off by talking to Nicole a little bit. That's just so she can frame that a little bit, how that works. We are subject to rules, but we also, there's interpretation of rules, but and we have input into changing rules, but the rules are established by a system that's kind of not outside of Moto America, but it's larger than Moto America. Is that correct, Nicole?
That's correct. And actually, we're sanctioned by FIM North America. We're not sanctioned by the FIM because we're not a world championship, but we are sanctioned by the AMA and FIM North America.
Okay.
So the AMA and FIM North America are responsible for our rules. Obviously, as the promoter of the series and, you know, the rights holder, we have a large input into those regulations, but the framework of our regulations has always been off of the World Superbike Rulebook from 2014. And Bill Cumbo, as one of the FIM MotoGP original stewards, has been kind of instrumental in keeping us in line with the World Championship rules.
Now, I'm going to toss something in here that I'm going to kind of make an analogy to a stick and ball sport for a minute. A couple of years ago in the NFL, there was this situation where we got to the point where we didn't really know what a catch was. I mean, they were like, well, did he catch that ball? Did he not catch that ball? And it got to be kind of a little bit of a controversy because they got into this, into the weeds about, you know, what constitutes a catch. And I thought about that. And I only bring that up because there is this concept of actively competing. And I didn't know, I thought this was like a recent thing, but I've discovered, and again, I'm going to ask Nicole about this. And then, because the fact that actively competing has been part of our rules since the beginning of Moto America in 2015. Is that correct, Nicole?
Yes, that's correct. So I kind of went back through all of the rule books to make sure that I had my facts straight. But so in 2015, the rule book very simply stated, you must be actively competing at the time of the red flag. It didn't state anything else. There was no definition of actively competing. A little later, a definition was added to give a little less subjectiveness, which I think is everyone's goal when making a rule book, is we don't want to have to guess. We want to be able to make black and white decisions that other people see as black and white. So that was changed. And if you like, I can kind of go over the evolution of this actively competing rule in Moto America's history.
Yeah, that'd be great. I think that's good. Yes.
So in 2015, I already said that was what actively competing was. Then also when we called a red flag, we looked back to the last lap that the leader and all others on the same lap had completed. So that becomes relevant a little later, but that's the way it was in 2015. Also, to be able to take the restart or be a finisher, you had to come back to the pit lane within 5 minutes. Stuart Higgs, who was helping us get our series started, in the early years, he's from BSB. He actually suggested that we remove that for a restart because then we're kind of masters of our own destiny. We can bring people in on the truck or we cannot. And then we don't have people trying to drop parts or fluids all over the racetrack. So that was actually removed from our rule book. So you do not have to make it back to the pits now within 5 minutes. That change was made in 2016. 2017, there was no change. 18, no change. In 2019, actively competing takes its current definition where you must be riding on the racetrack or in the pit lane, attempting to repair or restart your machine, everything that we've all seen. And that was actually in response to the FIM, the World Superbike and MotoGP had changed that rule to make it more clear. I don't know what incident they were referring to. But I know we do take our verbiage identical in that particular part around actively competing. Also around that time, we added that you may be required to be cleared by medical. And that was in response, I think everyone knows, and not to pick on Bobby because I like Bobby. He's great. He's a great guy, great rider. But in response to Bobby Fong was not allowed to compete at BIR. Because he was deemed to be not actively competing. That was in 2018, I believe. So then in 2020, everyone remembers, again, Bobby Fong, but this time it was at Barber, where at the last lap of the race, Bobby Fong crashes, and he had his bike up and going before the red flag came out. So the red flag wasn't actually because of Bobby. The red flag was because there was debris left on the track. So Bobby was deemed to be actively competing because he was riding on the racetrack. And since, unfortunately, the rules were set up to where you looked back to the lap before, he was deemed the winner. And nobody liked that. Those of us in the tower, we hated that. Actually, but it's what the rule book said. So we didn't have a choice but to officiate what the rule book said. And that was an incredibly unpopular decision. But you know, that's the kind of contract that we have with everyone is that we are going to do exactly what the rule book says. We can't decide which rules we like and which rules that we don't like. It just had to be made. So then that created another rule. Another adjustment to this actively competing and red flag part to where we don't look back. And also it added a line, which the world championship doesn't have, but this was our decision to kind of fix our specific problem, is we have the ability to give a time adjustment. So in Bobby Fong's case, like I said, Bobby was riding before the red flag even came out. He would have, you know, crossed the finish line in fifth. if the race had continued green. We weren't given that option because we had to go back to the last lap. So that was taken away. So now the results are based on your last crossing of the finish line. And if you cross between, if you crash between the your last crossing of the finish line and the red flag, then we are allowed to add a time adjustment to your total time to replicate the amount of time that you would have been on the ground if it had stayed in green flag conditions. So if the Bobby Fong situation from Barber happened in current day, he would have been deemed actively competing and he would have been given a time adjustment and probably finished around fifth place, which is where he crossed the finish line anyways. And that obviously would have been a much less controversial call. So you can see in these two things, actively competing kind of bit Bobby once and helped Bobby the second time. So that was changed. And then in 2023, kind of our final change happened, due to Daytona. We had a lot of conversations with riders after Daytona and teams after Daytona and how that all went. And one of them, it was actually with Josh Hayes, you know, where he was talking about, Teague Hobbs. Teague Hobbs crashed and was absolutely actively competing. He ran to his bike and picked it up. However, since we can only apply that time adjustment at the end of the race, not during the restart, Teague was put in his grid position based on his last crossing of the finish line. And Josh is telling me, he's like, man, and it didn't affect Josh, I don't think, but he's saying, hey, it's never fair for a rider to have crashed and then get gridded in front of another rider who passed them while they were on the ground. And I said, Josh, man, I can't argue with you about that. So we added that to the restart portion. So now we can do the time adjustment in the restart as well as for the finish, which I think makes it a little more fair for everyone.
Well, I'm not a fan of the rule, but I'm not a fan of many rules that keep riders from racing because that's just the side of this that I come from. Mm-hmm. It's always been to me, like, I don't know, since I was a kid, it's like, if you crashed and a red flag came out, you're like, holy shit, I just got lucky and I'm going to be fine. I can go start at the back of the grid. And I think that's a lot of people have that in their mind. So when they think that doesn't get to happen, then they have an issue.
Yeah, that's based on like everyone thinking, oh, we determine who causes the red flag, which we don't. Right. You know, we don't determine who causes it. The safety considerations caused it. But the actively competing rule, I think that's trying to avoid exactly that. It's trying to allow it so that people that would have continued under green flag conditions are allowed to continue. And people that wouldn't have continued under green flag conditions don't get the lucky dog of the red flag.
So what could he have done differently? Was it, I mean, you can't imagine, I mean, a guy crashes, right? If you crash a motorcycle, which you've done, we've all done, you crash a motorcycle, it takes a minute to figure out what the hell's going on. And you're figuring out if you're hurt. And then your next thing is usually like, oh, I got to go grab the bike to see if the bike's okay, so I can get going again. That's what a racer thinks, right? What part of that, did any of that make a difference to him, or was he done, or was he already done?
So maybe then, Paul, I should kind of set the stage for how this whole decision was made.
Yes, please.
Okay. So in race control, it is the race director's job and no one else's job to stop the race. So Rick, you know, stops the race and that puts everything else into motion. Dan, who's the other member of race direction, he goes out on track. So
that's Dan Argano.
Eyes and ears. Yes, Dan Argano. And that leaves me and Rick to make the decisions as far as the grid, actively competing, et cetera. So I turn to Phoenicia, who is our marshal coordinator. She's not a Moto America employee. She works our Road Atlanta and Barber events. So I turn to Phoenicia and say, who are the bikes down? And I got four. And I start pulling up the video. So a new thing for us last year is this replay machine that allows us to very quickly get to our TV camera video. So I queue up some videos. I bring Rick back. And what we're looking at is at the time or just immediately following the red flag. And so with Gus, determination on, you know, three other riders, two of which were not allowed to compete, one of which was because they were actually back on their bikes before the red flag came out. And then with Gus, the decision, what we could see is we could see Gus kind of come to a stop. He sat up as in like on his knees. He lifted his visor. And then he put his head down. And it to us, you know, and this looked like not pain. This looked like he wasn't planning on continuing. So we continue to watch because we're wanting to see what his next move is. And then the camera pans away. At that point, camera pans to the bike. And what we see is that it took 38 seconds from the time of the crash for him to return to the bike. We can see his feet at that point. And given the fact that we're only allowed to make the call based on what he's doing at the time of the red flag, you know, to us, that seemed, you know, 38 seconds is quite a bit after the red flag. And so we determined that we didn't see anything that led us to believe he was actively competing. Rick, do you want to add anything to that assessment?
No, I think that's pretty concise. And, you know, we looked at that video several times, you know, just to be sure about our decision. And I mean, we both agreed, and without any argument about it, that at the time of the display of the red flag, he was making no indication that he was going to return to the motorcycle and return to the racetrack or try to get back to the pits. So yeah, that was something we definitely looked at extensively, and, you know, felt pretty confident in our observations that he was not actively competing.
So then we push the grid, tell timing and scoring. As the grid is being pushed, we are told that there was another rider, 688, who crashed. I pull up the replay. We see that he's riding. Rick and I agree he can restart. After, I think Gus had already been pushed off the grid at this point, we were given two more bikes that had fallen. It was 229 and 606. When I asked them about what had happened, the marshals, I was told that they had both continued. So we said, okay, we just left them on the grid and let it happen. And as it turned out, that was definitely a mistake. Those two riders, 606 didn't take the start, I don't believe, but 229 did take the start. And those are the people that you see sitting on the wall, and 100%, they shouldn't have been on the grid. So that was a mistake on our part, because we weren't given the information. And so that's kind of when I put my other hat on and I start thinking about how we can make things better and not make mistakes like that again.
Yeah, Nicole, let me just interject for a minute, only because I want to point out to the listeners, that is one thing that Kevin Rodeo actually pointed out. Well, how come Gus couldn't start, but these other two riders did? And to your point, that was an error, human
yes.
error. And you, yes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as an official, you can only make the best decision that you can with the information that you're given. And so that's why I say, like, I put on my other hat as director of operations and go, okay, how can I give us better tools? Well, World Superbike and MotoGP, they have transponders that, you know, tell us race control, you know, where the bikes are, if the bike is running, you know, if the bike is moving, they can do in-dash communication, all of those things. We don't have that, but I'd love to get it or get a simpler version of it. But it does have a pretty big cost implication into the paddock, because each rider would have to buy that specific transponder and that specific dash. And there's a lot of implications there. But what we can do, and what my plan is to have one of our race control employees go over to timing and scoring and verify with them what we get from the marshals. And then also there's a feature that we can turn on and purchase in SpeedHive that gives us a predictive map that shows when the riders would get stuck in a certain split. So that will give us a way to kind of verify both. We haven't had this problem before because we haven't had 8-9 bikes down in this particular situation, you know, like we had here. And so it definitely stressed our system and showed where we can make improvements. So I talked to, and that investigation was actually done because Kevin texted me and said, hey, before our meeting at the end of the day, can you please look into this? And I said, absolutely. So I look into it and I sat down with Kevin in the meeting and I said, hey, this is why we made these decisions. Absolutely. These two people should not have been allowed. And that was our error. And, you know, for that, I'm sorry. You know, and we're going to make changes. And in that meeting, Kevin had asked what if we had looked at the Barber CCTV video, and we had not, because the replay system is quite a bit faster And the Barber CCT video usually isn't of the same quality because it's not using, you know, our TV cameras, but it's also very clunky and difficult to get to. So Kevin asked, "Hey, Nicole, can you pull that video?" And I said, "Absolutely." So when I pulled that video of the Barber CCTV footage, it shows exactly what we're talking about. It shows Gus, you know, sit up, lift his visor, put his head down, and he's with his head down for about 16 seconds. And then he stands up and walks away from the motorcycle before likely seeing the red flag. I don't want to surmise what he saw and what made him turn around, but then he turns around and gets back to the bike at 38 seconds. So that was not available to us at the time. But we did see it afterwards, which kind of confirmed, you know, that our decision as far as was he planning on actively competing during green flag conditions was correct.
Yeah. And Nicole, I also, another thing I want to interject on this and say, so this is a situation where you guys did make a decision. You did not have the benefit of that other video. So no. The decision was not made based on that video because it wasn't part of the whole thing. But what that video did is corroborate and show that you guys did, in your opinion, well, in your judgment, make the right decision based on it's more evidence that showed that Gus was not actively competing. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. I think 38 seconds is a little quick. Whenever I crashed a motorcycle, I don't want to see the thing for 38 days at least. But anyways, it's a different situation. What the question I have, and I know all this takes time and you're making decisions as quickly as you can, but I think what makes things worse is when that, you know, and again, Rick would know this more than anybody. It's like when you get your bike back from your rider crashing it, you're working like crazy to get the thing ready so that it can go back out on the track. And then the rider gets on the bike, goes, is allowed to leave pit lane and comes back for the warm-up lap. He's gridded at the back. He starts to get gridded. And then all of a sudden he's pushed off the track. Why was he even allowed to leave pit lane? Was that just a thing of the final decision had yet to be made?
No, the decision had been made. He wasn't on the grid. We don't have a perfect way to communicate. It would be great if we could show the grid on the timing screen so that everyone could see it immediately. And that's something we've talked about, but not quite been able to execute. So I don't know. I won't say if Kevin and Gus were told to not go out. We only have one guy at pit out, so he couldn't possibly, you know, catch 36 people as they go by and catch one. So it's possible that they didn't go down and tell him, or it's possible that they did and Kevin just sent him anyways. I really don't know. But he was not meant to be on the grid since before the warm-up lap. I mean, before the siding lap started.
All right. What I try to do with myself when I screw up, and I screw up a lot, I always think if I had to do it over again, what would I do differently? And I want to pose that to both of you guys. What is there anything you would have done differently? I mean, hindsight's 20/20. We know that. What would you have done differently if you had to do this situation over again?
So I certainly would have made the changes that we're making now to make sure that we don't start two people, because that's inexcusable. And I totally understand them being upset. Like, wait a second, Gus seems more actively competing than the person sitting on the wall. And it wasn't that we determined the person sitting on the wall was actively competing and Gus wasn't. It's that we didn't have that information. So that's problem number one, right? And that's a big problem. And it's something that I don't ever want to see happen again, because it's not the professional series that I want us to be. Also, coming up with a little better way to communicate to everyone. You know, the radio is a difficult thing because we want to leave the radio clear. So whether we add a WhatsApp or whether we make an easier way to put something on timing screens, you know, it's like what you're saying, that is correct. Like, a lot of this confusion with not only Bo Scus Rodeo, but also with Jarrett Nissany, and a lot of the emotion could have been avoided if they would have had the information immediately. And so I think that's something that, especially as director of operations, I've got to think about and really come up with a better solution so that our teams don't have that situation, because that's not excusable either.
Yeah. And the other thing too is, like, the fans see it and they go, what the hell's going on? Whereas if they didn't see it, they might not even know. I mean, or they could find out what actually happened instead of just seeing what they think is something that's not good.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Okay, so I want to ask some questions to Rick, our race director, whose job it is, among many jobs. I shouldn't say, you know, I don't want to make it sound like this is all Rick, but you're the one that makes the judgment on if and when to throw the red flag. So I want to ask you about the situation at the beginning of that Twins Cup race. So obviously there was rain. Rocco's in the lead. Rocco Landers is in the lead. He's genuflecting, whatever you want to call it, putting his hands up, saying there's rain, pointing at the ground. And he kind of he's done this before. He did it at New Jersey. And I'm not going to judge how he feels about when it rains on the track, but in both cases, he kind of went backwards. So there wasn't a red flag thrown, and he basically kind of gave up his position a little bit because he was focused on trying to get the race stopped. Well, Gus Rodeo, even when he was in second, I saw that he also was motioning for rain as well. So my question to you, it's kind of, I think I know the answer to this, but I want to ask you, Rick, why was the red flag thrown?
Well, just to back up a little bit, Sean, just to give you an idea of why I didn't call it sooner. So we were watching the radar, which showed a cell approaching that was rapidly dissipating. And so initially it was sprinkling, and we had no reports of heavy rain anywhere on the track. So in those cases, you know, we always pause and consider all of the conditions around the racetrack. And one thing I have is in front of me, I have what we call a multi-view or two multi-view screens. And on those two screens, we have 16 cameras usually. And I don't know the exact number at Barber, but that's typical. So anyway, my focus is not on the broadcast feed. I'm scanning around the 16 different views to try to get as much information as I can. So in doing that, I don't see every camera angle at the same time. It's impossible. So in this case, I didn't see either of those riders raise their hands when they did. So I was still scanning and listening to the calls from the corner marshals and making sure that the rain flags were out, even though it was still just sprinkling at that time. So that's the reason why I didn't respond immediately when the two riders raised their hands at start finish. I didn't see it immediately. So going forward from there, we had a crash and then we had multiple crashes. At that point, I called the red flag because our resources were going to be strained, especially in race control, trying to stay on top of the, you know, all the various things that were going on with crashes on the racetrack. So the reason for the red flag was that we had multiple riders in one corner, and there was a safety aspect of, you know, if somebody else were to crash in that corner, then we've got, you know, not just the riders exposed, but our corner workers exposed as well. So that was the reason for the red flag. And the timing of it, obviously, you know, some riders benefit from the timing, some don't. And it's never easy. You know, you have riders that are still upright and are totally in control of their motorcycle, and they deserve a chance to continue if they can. Now that means if conditions allow. And so it was a rapidly changing scenario with the weather, and it could have been called a little bit earlier, perhaps, if I had had a better view of the conditions. Like I said, the radar was showing me that this was breaking up and dissipating, and that, you know, there was a good chance that the sprinkles were all we were going to get, and so that turned out to not be the case, and you know, unfortunately, I don't have precognition. So I didn't, you know, I can't tell for sure which way it's going to go. But, you know, my first instinct is to give it a chance, you know, with safety considerations in mind and so on. So it's a very fine line in those kind of conditions. You know, and I try to make the best and quickest decision for all involved. And in this case, you know, the weather turned suddenly worse, and then the crashes occurred, and obviously it was unsafe to continue at that point.
Yeah, and Rick, you know, the conditions turned suddenly worse, but they also pretty quickly turned suddenly okay. It's interesting. I think, as I recall, the restart was made under dry conditions, right? I mean, there was no issue after that once the restart happened.
Right. It was a very quick little burst of rain, and then it went away. And that's what kind of what we were observing on the radar, was that this cell that was initially quite large was rapidly dissipating. So it makes it difficult to predict what it's going to do at that point.
So this is interesting, an interesting thing to point out. You've not only got your eyes on about 16 cameras, you're not just sitting there watching the broadcast like the rest of us are. You got your eyes on all those cameras around the track, and you have your eye, when we know there's weather conditions, you have your eye on where the weather is and what's going on there. So that's one other factor that you're trying to keep your eye on. Wow, that's intense. So go ahead.
Sorry, no, I was just going to point out that, you know, that I'm observing those videos and so on, but I'm also listening to the calls from our corner marshals and our communicator, and attempting to monitor everything that's being said on the radio as well.
Man, so that was a loaded question that I had for you, Rick, when I said what caused the red flag. Well, of course, I know the crashed riders caused the red flag. And if you know, it was a possibility that weather was going to cause that red flag before the crash. And the thing I want to point out here is we don't want riders to crash. We don't want them to risk getting hurting corner workers, tearing up a bunch of equipment. So we don't call a red flag. We don't wait till riders crash to call a red flag. It just happened to be a rider's crash at that time. Is that right? I mean, I want to clarify that.
Yeah, for the general gist of it is yes, that we were definitely anticipating having to call the race for rain, and it just was an overlap in time, you know, of the rain arriving and the riders crashing, and you know, we basically had corner marshals with, you know, one hand on the red flag, and you know, so the weather, you know, was a factor, obviously, and we were considering that, but as soon as I saw the multiple riders crashing, that was when I said, you know, we've got to stop this now. So
okay, Rick, I realize that this red flag thing, it's like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. So it's a difficult decision. Do you base that decision at all on who's on the track? In other words, are you less likely to throw a red flag as quickly if it's Superbike guys as opposed to it being Twins Cup guys? Or is it the same?
No, it's the same. I mean, there is some consideration given to the level of experience with our various classes, but for something like that, I think it's pretty much across the board of all classes, you know, how I consider that.
Yeah, because like at New Jersey last year, I know it was easy to focus on Josh Hayes and see that he had his wheels in line. His lap times didn't drop that much and everything seemed to be okay. But as we all know, there's not many Josh Hayes is in our paddock. I was just wondering if that played into it at all.
Well, not really. I mean, like I said, we're considering the entire field, both in the, you know, those that want to stop it and those that want to continue. So, you know, you've got to balance that as well. You know, so it's, you know, kind of different situation. With New Jersey, we never got full rain until right as I threw the red flag. As soon as I saw the heavy rain, I threw the red flag in New Jersey. in Barber, we never had heavy rain. It sprinkled, you know, initially, and then basically, like I said, as the rain started to come down seriously, we had multiple riders crash. So it was, you know, the crashing occurred before I could even decide whether it was raining, actually raining, or just sprinkling.
Okay, so I have two questions. I'm two different things. I want to ask Rick this one, and then I want to ask the next one to Nicole, just so you guys know. Okay, and I think Nicole, well, could he answer either, and so could Rick. So I don't know why I'm doing it this way. But Rick, I'm going to ask you this question, and this is an honest question. Aside from a rider who crashes and is hurt, and we know what that's like, how should a rider act to be actively competing if they crash and they're okay?
Well, if they crash and they're okay, they're by the way the rule is written right now, their first motion should be towards the motorcycle, making some attempt at repairing, rejoining, returning to the pit lane. You know, that's even the simple fact of you know, picking up the motorcycle or attempting to pick up the motorcycle in most cases would be considered attempting to, you know, actively compete. So, and the way the rule is written is, you know, at the display of the red flag, which means immediately. So there's no consideration for, how much time it takes, so on and so forth. Obviously, you know, I understand, you know, when a rider crashes, he sometimes takes a bit to get your wits back together. So I understand that, but the way the rule is written, we're not given that, that option. It says at the time the red flag is displayed. So, you know, that's fairly clear to me in that rule. If there was a time period, must be, you know, they must be actively competing within so many seconds of the red flag or within a minute or whatever that is, that would be a different situation. But we don't have that option the way the rule was written.
Okay. So one of the things another little nuance to this, and there's a lot of nuances, but another little nuance to this I want to ask you about or point out to you is, okay, I mentioned if a rider crashes and they're hurt, well, that's obvious. Okay. You know, they're not actively competing. They're, you know, whatever their situation might be. But the other part of this is if they crash and in order to actively compete, they have to go to their bike. But if their bike is in an impact zone, then is that you're going to throw the red flag anyway? Am I right? I mean, what do you do there? You don't want a rider to actively compete by going into an impact zone to get their bike. Is that right?
So Sean, interestingly enough, this is another evolution of the rule, which I didn't bring up, but we added with safety considerations because of none other than Gus Rodeo at Pittsburgh in Junior Cup. He fell, and his first instinct was to run away from the motorcycle. And I say run away, not walk away, run away, right? Because that's a safety consideration. But it was, as Rick says, we're not allowed to take that into consideration. It's at the time of the red flag. And rightfully so, you know, Kevin's saying, hey, you know, I mean, isn't my kid allowed to get out of the impact zone, you know, and then immediately return to the motorcycle? And I said, well, that sounds reasonable enough. So the rule actually has a modification that says with safety considerations, I guess you're allowed to consider safety considerations. So a good example of this would be Road Atlanta. If you remember the Twins crash, in turn one, the rider's first instinct was to get to their bike. And then when they saw that more riders were crashing, they ran away, but then ran right back. You know, you want to take rider safety, you know, first and everything. So seeing the, I'm getting out of the impact zone quickly and then immediately returning to my motorcycle, we do have the discretion to see that.
You know, it occurred to me, whether it's, I don't know, a track day or school or whatever, I mean, there are situations where me as a blown novice rider who's riding around the track and I crash, well, I'm done for the day. I know we don't do that to professionals because, okay, whether it was their fault or not, a mistake was made somewhere. And it's like, we give them a chance to overcome their mistake and get back in a race. And there's been time and time again where a rider who's crashed has actually won the race. Well, if we had a rule where if you crash, you're out, then that would affect a lot more than this. So it's these nuances in these variations and in how this situation happens. And leading that, Nicole, I want to bring up, there's been less discussion about the situation with Jared Nissany, but at the same time, there was a situation where he came back to the pits and he tried to get back in the race, but there were different circumstances with his situation. He crashed under green flag conditions and there were some issues with the equipment on the bike. Can you talk about that, kind of how that differed a little bit from the Gus Rodeo situation? Because I know in talking to, well, let's face it, rodeo racing is, it's a family operation. Kevin is the owner of that team and his son is the rider. Altus Motorsports, it's George and Jeanette Nissany, and Jared happens to be their son. I'm just bringing that up because there sometimes are emotions involved in it, and things like that. And I'm just going to leave that there. I'm not making much commentary on that, but I want to ask you in that situation, because it was parents in both situations that did contact you, and the situation about Jared was a little bit different in a certain way. Can you talk about that?
I'm actually going to put that over to Rick, because he, since it was during green flag conditions, you know, that was his call because he's overall responsible for that.
Okay, that's great.
Yep. So in that case, Jared crashed. You know, I happened to observe the final part of the crash, saw the bike tumble, saw him pick it up, and I saw a broken right side handlebar, which has your front brake and throttle control. There was massive quantities of dirt on the motorcycle. The fairing was hanging off, and we were about to start the race. So that was on the warm-up lap. And in my judgment that, you know, having seen numerous, too many to count, really, crashed motorcycles in my time, my opinion was that motorcycle was not safe to continue around the racetrack right before the start of a race, or at any time really, but it was a critical time in the day that, you know, we had a full field that would be coming potentially across debris on the track, slow rolling motorcycle, many various things. So I asked our communicator to instruct the corner marshals to not let him continue, that they were to direct him to a safe location and park the motorcycle. Well, he was instructed. I saw the corner marshals instructing him to move the motorcycle to a safe location. He disregarded them and rode onto the racetrack and proceeded to drop a part on the motor on the racetrack immediately. And so he did make it back to pit lane. The debris from his motorcycle wasn't on a racing line, so that turned out good in that case. It was lucky more than anything. But the fact that he disregarded the instructions that were directly relayed from race direction to the corner marshals, I said, do not let him restart the race. You know, he should be parked in a safe location at the crash site. And, you know, that again, you know, our grid staff was there. They communicated that to him, but they continued to try and rejoin the race. I get it. You know, it's the heat of the moment, and you know, there's no saying that if I was in that situation, I wouldn't do the same thing. But nevertheless, you know, we can't just have our competitors disregarding instruction from our corner marshals when they've been directly instructed to relay that information.
Well, yeah. And Rick, oh, sorry, Nicole, I just want to say, Rick, that's a very important point, because there was a misunderstanding that I heard about. And it was the fact that there was a concern that our corner marshals, of which some of them are volunteers, made a decision on their own to tell Jarrett he couldn't race. That came directly from you. You communicated to that corner marshal to do that, correct?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah, that came directly from me.
Okay.
And I think there's a couple of things to note here. Like, number one, in case people don't know Rick's background in motorcycle. He's relatively new as an official, but how many championships as a crew chief do you have?
AMA championships, I believe it's 15 over the years.
I used to have the number, Rick. There's got to count Canada too.
Well, nobody should count Canada.
only in my mind.
So, you know, for stuff like that, I'm certainly not going to argue. I'm not going to argue with Rick on mechanical things. But what's also important, and is this is during green flag conditions. You know, if this had been, everyone I think is a little confused on the timing. Yes, there was a red flag, but that red flag came on the start that he didn't make. And after the leaders had completed a full lap. So even if the next race hadn't been red flagged, let's say, and that next race was stopped because of an injured rider. But even if that next race hadn't been red flagged, and even if Rick hadn't have told him he couldn't come back into the pit lane, Jarrett still wouldn't have been able to restart because he didn't take the start before the leaders made the first lap. So he would have been excluded either way.
Correct. Well, the other thing, Rick, that you pointed out that I actually didn't know about is because this goes back to what Paul was saying in the beginning about in Gus's case and actually in Jarrett's case, too. His team, those respective teams were doing everything they could to get that bike, those bikes ready for the restart. And Rick, you said that essentially in Jarrett's case, his team, it was communicated to his team that he wasn't going to be able to restart that race. Is that correct?
As far as I know, they were communicated with. I asked our communicator, Walter, to relay that to our grid staff to let them know that he was not eligible for the restart.
Okay. And like you said, and you're with your experience, I mean, you probably would have done the same thing, trying to get the rider going and find out what happens. And I've seen it even where some of the, you know, I don't know where a crew chief or a team owner will go. I don't know where you're supposed to line up, but just go out on the grid. They'll tell you. And I think Kevin actually said that to Gus at some point during there. And then he found out, well, he wasn't going to be able to be part of that. So, Nicole, I want to go back to one thing that you and I have talked about offline, and it's, so Gus, I'm trying to get this right. These details are a little difficult, but so I can't even look at 16 TVs and try to figure that out. But that's aside from that. Nicole, when Gus crashed in bringing out the red flag, is it right that he wasn't the first one to crash?
No. There was and so we don't see program. So some of the things that some people have said about, oh, we heard Gus's interview and then decided not to let him start. I still haven't heard Gus's interview because we can't hear the program. And honestly, we're not really watching program. We're looking at all of these different feeds. So Gus was not the first one to crash. I can't tell you exactly, you know, right now who crashed first. I can pull up the replay system when we get to Road America and get some more information on that. But there was at least two or three riders who had crashed before Gus had. But when you look at the program feed, and it's not replays, you know, they didn't do replays, but they show the aftermath of the other crashes after Gus fell, kind of making you feel like he was the first one to fall and he was not.
Yeah, that was news to me because I absolutely thought he was. And it just seemed like the way it played out, it was that way. So that's interesting. And I can definitely understand that in Rick's case, but you knew too, Nicole. So Paul and me and everyone else in the media center, we watch the races just like the fans do. You guys don't. You don't watch stuff like this.
Okay. No, like honestly, half the time that we're up there, we have no idea the kind of crap storm that's going on downstairs. And that's where we, you know, I think we learned a lot from this incident. And one of the reasons that I really like the group of people that I work with is, you know, at the end of every day, we have kind of a debrief where we talk about, you know, what we did right or mostly what we did wrong or what could be better or how we can make things better. Because, I mean, the last thing in the world that we want is we want our teams to feel like they're getting good information from race control, that we are looking out for their best interests and we're officiating in a way that's clear, you know, so we're going to talk about this rule. I'm not saying that the rule is going to change or we're going to change the rule, but how could we make it more clear, you know? You know, or maybe it will change. I don't know, but I know that we have already been talking about it. And I know that Wayne and Chuck and the AMA are going to be talking about how to make this more clear or how to make this better, because, you know, the last thing in the world we want is the situation that we have now. In either case, you know, I enjoy working with Altus Motorsports and I you know, also enjoy working with Kevin. I chatted with him before this podcast and kind of gave him a little more of my, you know, my opinion on it. And, you know, I'd like to see both of them continue and both of them do well.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a good point. And I think that's a good place where we can end on this is the fact that there was an initial kind of outcry. The fact that, oh, here's Moto America laying down these laws that are not, I don't know, I don't mean to be not subject to interpretation, but there's no discussion ifs, ands, or buts about it. Well, this idea about actively competing has evolved since 2015, and it's evolved because of various things that have happened on the track and with you guys, your constant desire to make things as fair and equitable as possible for all the riders. There's no favoritism. The riders are the show, the most important asset we have. And the fact that you guys are always trying to do what's right out there. And I want to make that clear. And that's really the spirit of what Moto America is. Would you say that, Rick and Nicole?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, just to take it a little bit further, you know, due to my experience in the paddock and my years in the paddock, I do know some of the riders personally, and I know their numbers off the top of my head, and I know who they are, and et cetera, et cetera. In a lot of cases, though, as the years go by, I know fewer and fewer of the competitors personally. And so my methodology for discussing who's who and what they're doing is strictly by their number. And, you know, quite often to me, who's in the championship lead doesn't really come into play. So in Gus's case, I knew the number 96 had crashed, but in the moment, I didn't know that he was in the championship points lead, and it took, you know, that consideration out of it. So, you know, to his benefit or his detriment, I wasn't considering the championship.
Yeah, I think definitely for me, one of the best things about working where we work and being at Moto America, you know, and you guys are on the all hands calls. I mean, we talk about the things that we don't get quite right. And, you know, when I go and say, hey, I think we need to make these improvements, you know, it's absolutely met with, you know, support and excitement. And, you know, I spent quite a bit of time talking to Wayne and talking to Chuck about this incident and, you know, how things could be better. And I think that if you look at where we were in 2015 to where we are in 2023, we're not perfect by any means, but we're certainly have a lot more tools at our disposal. And we're just going to keep working to make sure that we bring a higher level to the championship every year. And if it weren't like that, you know, I definitely wouldn't enjoy my job as much.
Okay, guys, I'm going to call an end to this. And I want to thank you both for coming on. My goal is to never hear actively competing again. I'm hoping that never even comes up in the rest of my life. So, and the red flag thing, I mean, it's a difficult thing. And I wouldn't want Rick's job when it comes to that, because as I said before, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. The only advice I gave the guy way, way back in an era when there was all kinds of issues with red flags is I think you can get ridiculed more for not throwing them than you do for throwing them. And I don't know, I would just take the position that I would pretend my son was out there, and then that's how I would decide if there was a red flag or not. But that's just me. But I do appreciate you guys. I do appreciate all you do. And I think you did a great job of explaining today of what happened over the course of the weekend that got a few people upset. So thanks for joining us. And Sean, thanks as always. Yeah. And we'll see you guys next week.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you, Sean.
You guys take care.
Bye now.